best new podcast in the world. From WWE to TNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Hebner. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to another episode of Reffin' It Up with Brian Hebner. I am the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is the man in the stripes, Mr. Brian Hebner. Brian, what's up, man?
Hey, man, not a whole lot. It is hot, hot, hot again. We always start our show with weather, and I can tell you right now, I know you can see me, they can't, but I'm in my wife beater and whatever you want to call it, but I would rather have my shirt off, but I just figured I better not do that because I didn't want to get you all hot. So, on the flip side here, we're switching things up just a little bit this week, and I'm really happy to do this. So we graciously had the availability of getting Mr. Jimmy Corderas on our show today. And for those of you who don't know him, if you don't, you've been in a closet if you listen to my show. Mm-hmm. He's a veteran of WWE/WWF, one of the great referees of all time. And he's going to help join us and cover Triple H today with us because he's got a lot more experience with him in many years that he worked with him. So he's going to help contribute to the show, and I'm very, very blessed to have him on. Jimmy Corderas, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, Brian. Thank you for having me on. And RJ, how you doing, buddy? Good to see
good.
You too.
I see you too.
And I've been blessed. I've had a blessed career, man. Over the years, getting to work with so many different talents, and one of the talents that we're going to talk about today that is huge and relevant today in a different sense than he was when I was actually working with him is Triple H. It was a fun time with him. Let's put it that way.
Cool deal.
Well, you know what? We're going to get up to our first count of this episode, and we'll talk a little bit, kind of incorporate him a little bit into that as well. So let's send it up to that right now. Last week, we had the last match of Ric Flair. So the numbers finally came out. It says, according to Wrestling Observer's newsletter, Ric Flair's last match was a big success, with the show receiving between 20,000 and 25,000 pay-per-view stream buys and 4,200 purchases through traditional cable. They're really comparing this to like the All Out pay-per-view that they had in AEW. They had 6,800 fans. They moved it from the Flair grounds to the Municipal Auditorium there in Nashville. I watched it. It was one of those things we talked about briefly last week, Brian, but it's just good to see the success of this type of show to honor to Ric Flair. Obviously, a guy that you guys know fairly well.
Yeah, I like we touched on a little bit last week, so I don't want to get way too far into that, but I do want to get some comments from Jimmy as soon as I'm done here. But, you know, hey, that's incredible. The amount of people that wanted to – that piqued the interest of those people. I mean, my gosh. And you just wonder at that number, which I'd love to know, and which we'll never know it, but how many people were just wrestling fans or just straight Ric Flair marks? But, no, congratulations. That's awesome, and I'm happy to hear that. I mean, that means that, you know – there's other wrestling out there. It's not just WWE, AEW, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So cahoots to comrade friends over there. You know, as far as what I want to ask Jimmy, did you watch it first of all?
I only watched the Flair match itself. That's it. I didn't watch the entire pay-per-view, which I have to go back and watch, but I'm just being perfectly honest with you. So far, I've only seen the Flair match. And yeah.
Your thoughts on that?
No, I'm glad that, you know, a lot of times in this industry, and contrary to popular opinion, I am very happy that they succeeded. I want all companies to succeed. I want the business as a whole to succeed because I'm a fan of the wrestling business. Just because the majority of my career happened in WWE doesn't mean I don't want other companies to succeed. I want everybody to do well, and I want the business as a whole to do well. That being said, I'm just glad Ric Flair, I thought his match versus Shawn Michaels was his last match at WrestleMania 25, I believe it was. Great way to go out, but maybe, you know, Flair wasn't ready at the time. in his mind. And I'm just glad for him that he can go out under his terms, you know, so to speak. And it seems like he is fine with going out the way he went out. Yeah. Was he the flair? It doesn't matter. When you talk about the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers in this industry, the top four that go on the mountain, Flair's definitely there as one of the greatest of all times. And for him to get to go out on his terms as opposed to someone else's terms is a big plus. And I'm sure he is extremely happy about that. And I'm happy for him for that too. And, you know, as someone who is honored to have been able to, I want to say share the ring with him, him allowing me to be a part of the ring. You know, it's just awesome to see him go out that way. And you know, hats off to him. And the fact that it was a huge success speaks volumes.
Yeah, the outside of All In, I misspoke earlier. I said All Out. I meant All In. Being the major promotions such as like WWE, WCW, AEW, those major. This actually gated about, let's see, $448,502. Just shy of All In at $458,000. So it's, and I think they did it in the right area, being Nashville. Did you guys think, and we'll move on after this, but did you guys think Nashville was the right area? Do you think they should have went to, say, like Charlotte or do like the Charlotte Coliseum or something?
That's, you know what, to be perfectly honest with you, it would have made more sense to go there. Maybe logistically speaking, there's a reason why they went to Nashville. And, you know, with, and of course, WWE being in town. Right. Didn't that hurt helps. As well. Yeah. That helps. But still, Ric Flair is known for being part of NWA / WCW before going to WWF at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a North Carolina boy. He's a Charlotte boy. Or Atlanta, which was the home of TBS, where you saw him at 6:05 every Saturday night. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe that would have been, from a visual perception, better. But at the same time, I'm thinking they were taking advantage of a situation where there were going to be a lot of wrestling fans in Nashville that weekend. And from a business standpoint, that was a smart move.
So to me, I'm totally with Jimmy. That was 100% about piggybacking off WWE, which is smart. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing at all, whatever the way I say it. Like as Jimmy just touched on, I mean, thousands and thousands of fans were already going to be there. They built their own audience too on top of it. So, it made sense. I mean, you know, it made sense for them financially. Obviously, we know that now. You know, also you think, you know, would Charlotte have drawn really well? I do believe it would have drawn really well. But would it have drawn better than it did there? Who knows? Because we don't know. But there was almost a guarantee doing it there. And that's why they did it. And I get it. I get it.
Yeah. And I think with Conrad being at the helm too, being a smart businessman that he is, it's like, okay, he tends to kind of group his StarCast or whatever he's doing around these major promotions, whether it be AEW or WWE, you know, that mass effect, something like that. And he's even said, because everybody's been talking to him, he talked about this earlier, is, oh, you're going to do another one WrestleMania in Los Angeles? And he's like, nope, that's WrestleCade. WrestleCade does all their stuff around WrestleMania too. So it's like, it's business. It's a good time to be associated with the wrestling business, be a boy, a guy, or a gal in the business itself. But something else has been, and I'm sure, Jimmy, you've talked about this recently too, is a lot of these recently released WWE stars are coming back. We saw Karrion Kross come back last Friday. We saw Dexter Lumis come back last night on Raw. SummerSlam, we saw Bayley, Io Shirai, and Dakota Kai. Why do you think they're all coming back now? Do you think it's the man with the three H's?
I think that's a big part of it. I think all the people you're talking about have dealt with him down in NXT when it was the developmental territory, the black and gold brand. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I could say about Hunter is he works well with those people. He listens and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that Vince McMahon doesn't listen and he's different, but Vince has got a more intimidating presence about him, if you know what I mean. When you're in Vince's, you know you're in front of the man, whereas Hunter makes you feel like he's just another one of the boys, even though he's the guy in charge. He was always very good at that. And he was, for lack of it, again, not a knock on Vince, but perception is reality, and Hunter is more approachable, and Hunter is a good communicator with talent. You know, Vince can be a little bit hard at times, whereas Hunter is like, look, let's talk about this. Let's get this settled and let's get this done. We want you back here. And people like working with Hunter, and you can see it just by the names of the people coming back and all the names out there rumored to be possibly on their way back.
And I'm going to say, touch on that too, Jimmy, sometimes it's scary to have you on here, especially in this aspect, because me and you think so much alike. I'm just going to say what I say, and it doesn't matter. But I don't think Vince is a good listener. I don't. I think Vince sees visions on his own way, and that's what he does. I think he has tunnel visions in many aspects of doing his creative. And I think that this is also not only what you said, and that's all exactly right. Triple H is very hands-on and very easy to work with because he is seemingly like one of the boys and does that very well when he's really not one of the boys. But I think Triple H and others that are in creative now are seeing that these were missed boats and missed opportunities. And they're saying, shit on that. Let's bring so-and-so back. Let's bring so-and-so back because he had this, he had that. We could do this, we can do that. I think that's purely just them realizing mistakes were made and who they released and who they didn't. And that's just what I think.
Now, did you guys, I know, Brian, you probably didn't, but Jimmy, did you, before you left the company, was Triple H higher up there in creative in the office, or was he strictly talent?
No. Well, he had input, but he wasn't officially a part of creative or anything like that. He was still an active in-ring competitor when I left. So in 2009. So, man, I can't believe it was 2009. So long. I mean, I'm like looking at this. I'm going, I'm that old.
Yeah, anyway. It's great.
No, but again, he had a lot of input because they put a lot of faith in him, and there was a lot of faith in Hunter because they knew he was smart to and very creative and can work with him. And it wasn't just for himself. He would have ideas. I mean, he helped me out way back during the referee strike angle. And stuff like that, you know what I mean? It was amazing because that happened because of him. Mm-hmm. If you got a minute, I could tell the story on exactly how it happened. But
we got a minute.
We got a couple minutes.
Okay. Well, I had JR was in charge of talent relations at the time, and I had asked him for some time off because I was getting married, and I wanted to take a couple of weeks to take a honeymoon. And, you know, back then, trying to ask for a couple of weeks off, you know, yeah, good luck. So I went to JR and said, listen, JR, you know, I'm getting married and you know how our schedule is. Would it be possible to get 2 weeks to do a honeymoon? So he says, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Enjoy yourself. Take your time, blah, blah, blah. And have a great time. And I was like, that's the coolest thing ever. So I went on my honeymoon. And obviously you're on your honeymoon. You're not watching wrestling. You want to stay married, right? So while I was away, they started the strike angle with the referees where they went on strike because they felt they were being abused and mistreated and blah, blah, blah. And that's when, Dr. Tom Pritchard and Harvey Whippleman and Steve Lombardi were the scab referees. So I come back from my honeymoon and I don't know this angle is going on. So, you know, all the other refs are like, hey, you know, Jimmy, welcome back. How does it feel being on strike? Ha ha ha. And all this stuff. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on. So I inquire and they said, yeah, well, you're gone. They're doing this thing and stuff like that. And then I run into Hunter and Hunter says, Corduroy, because he used to call me Corduroy. That was his nickname for me. Corduroy, welcome back. How's the honeymoon? I said, cool. He says, how does it feel coming back and being out of a job? Ha, ha, ha. And I said, nah, Hunter, I can't afford to go on strike because I just got married. So what if I was to, like, come back and go to cross the picket line telling them, hey, I just got back. I can't afford to go on strike, and have all the guys waffle me with the signs. And the next time you see them outside, I'm, like, kind of shyly picketing with them. And he went, JR, come here. Jimmy's got an idea. So they ran through it and said, hey, I'm going to be the one regular referee who breaks the picket line. And then going into the pay-per-view, which was a six-pack challenge match for the championship, the other refs would come out, drag me out, beat me up. And Stone Cold was a special guest enforcer. He would count the pin. And then the next night, everything would get resolved on Raw. So Hunter was the one who initiated that I be the one regular referee to break the picket and referee, all on just an offhanded comment as a joke. but he turned it into an angle on television.
That's awesome. I actually remember all that stuff, man.
Yeah, that was so much fun. I still owe Kyoto a few receipts from that, but yeah.
Oh, we all do. But I wasn't even there then.
Yeah.
Because when was it? It was what, 90? Was that 99?
99. Yeah. September 99.
Wasn't was Larry Boa, was he a part of the refs too? Was it one of the baseball umpires? I thought was it Boa?
Unless he did something when I wasn't there.
I'd have to Google it after, because that's gonna bug me. But no, go with this, with Karrion Kross coming back this past Friday, and we'll move on to our second comment after this, but he's really being thrusted into the main event, Universal title in the coming months. A lot of programming. A little too much too late, or is it just kind of just hit strike while the iron's hot?
I think it's I think you can make the argument that it might be too quick, but at the same time, he made an impact. A huge impact against Drew McIntyre, and they're you know, on SmackDown, and not everybody knew who Karrion Kross was. Mm-hmm. Now those who weren't aware of him saw this and are going to maybe tune in next week and say, "Hey, what is this guy all about? Who is he? I want to find out more about him." So maybe it's a good move. And it, you know, when he got called up originally, it didn't quite pan out very well for him, because they had changed the persona basically from what he was in NXT. And now with Hunter kind of bringing that NXT persona back, I don't know if he's going to be thrust into that main event picture. Who knows what's going to happen, like Clash at the Castle or whatever it's called over there. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it turns into a triple threat. And then that maybe you, in a three-way, that's a way to get out of certain situations and save face for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
See, to me, what this says, you know, and we all have our own philosophies, but to me, this is what this says. First of all, right place, right time. Cody being out is huge. And it's something where they're looking for something. And I truly believe when he came in, went through the NXT, came into the Raw program, he started on Raw, right? Not SmackDown.
Who's that? Karrion?
Yeah.
Yeah, he came out SmackDown. Oh, well, first time this time.
Well, shit, I don't know.
Well, when he got called up the first time, when he got that stupid gimmick with the costume and stuff, that was on Raw.
Okay, so here we go. All right, so let me get back to my philosophy, because that helped me out. So basically, they fucked it all up, and they know it. And I think that was a Vince thing. And if Vince likes you, he likes you. If he doesn't like you, or there's something about you he doesn't like, it's just not going to go. And I think that was the case. And I think that Triple H is like, hey, dude, this guy is a baller. And he is a baller. And he can be a baller if done correctly. And I think Triple H will do it correctly. And I think people that think it's too soon, it can be, but I don't think it is. And I think this is the right place, right time. Cody being out is a perfect example of, you know, one man goes down, another man goes up. And I just think that this is them looking at it creatively, going, we dropped the ball with this guy. Let's rehash this. Let's do this differently. And I think that's wise.
All right. Well, you know, let's head up to our second count. Let's get this show on the road. Let's talk a little Triple H. Triple H, born July 27th, 1969, Nashua, New Hampshire, Northeast guy, one of Killer Kowalski's guys. And he's one of those guys that'll go back there and be proud of it. Is that something that you guys noticed when he first came in?
Absolutely. He never forgot his roots, and he never forgot where he came from, and he always showed utmost respect for the legends of the past, and Killer Kowalski especially being, you know, a student of his. Kowalski had a special place in Hunter's heart, you know what I mean? And I think that's where Hunter learned the one thing that some people forget in this business is, regardless of whether you like someone or not, because not everybody's, let's be honest, not everybody's going to like everybody. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you do show respect, because this business is about respecting the other person. And Hunter was always respectful. At least I could speak for myself. He was always respectful to me, always cordial, always fun. I don't want to say we were best buds because I wasn't part of the clique. Let's put it that way. But but at the same time, it was he was always cool with me, and I always appreciated that. You know, and you walk around, hey, Trips, hey, Corduroy, you know, that kind of stuff. And it wasn't just me. He was like that with a lot of guys. And I think a lot of people put unnecessary heat on him because of who his friends were.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, I get that, yeah.
And not only that, I mean, Killer Kowalski was also known as a major league trainer. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you have people that have been trained by certain people. Shit, nowadays, I mean, I'm in no disrespect. I'll hear all these guys from wherever tell me who they're trained by. And I'm like, well, who the fuck is that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, but Killer Kowalski was one of those guys where, oh, I was trained by him. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I almost compare it to the nowadays in my way. Like, and Jimmy, you can probably say, and maybe come up with something better, but I'm saying, but it'd be like a guy now that's making his way and making some waves and saying, I was trained by Ricky Morton. You know what I mean? Like, you know, a guy with a name, a guy with a presence, a guy who did something in the business. And I'm not saying that people that train don't, you know, you don't have to make a name for yourself, but it does kind of help. I mean, because it kind of puts you, you know, the experience level. But no, anybody trained by him was always considered something that major, you know, major being trained.
Yeah, because we've seen a lot of guys, too, in the business now or whatever promotion, being trained by Lance Storm before he ended up closing shop up there because he was up in Calgary, right?
Calgary. Calgary, Alberta, Canada. You have to say the whole thing if you're gonna say Calgary.
Oh, now we're talking Jimmy's language. We're talking that Canadian stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Come on. That's why I brought it up. I used to actually have a shirt. My old show. I used to have. It was a running gag. Everybody thought me. I talked about it before. Everybody thought I was Canadian because I was so close to the border. So I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to run with this. And I had I forgot where I got it, but I said A for effort. It was E H, and then for effort, and then the middle was a maple leaf.
Nice.
Hey, nice. Jimmy, just a question off the fly here, off the cuff here. Mm-hmm. Have you ever worked with Lance as an agent?
With Lance as an agent? No, I have not. I haven't had that pleasure. I've got to work a match of his, believe it or not even for WWE. ROH came to town here in Toronto, and they asked me if I would referee a match for them between Lance Storm and Mike Bennett.
Oh, wow.
And I said, I would love to, and they offered to pay me, of course, which was cool. But that was awesome. And Lance and I have become, you know, buddies now and stuff like that. He was in town recently to do a little thing for Santino's school, and we met up for lunch and stuff like that while he was here and stuff. So Lance is a good teacher because he knows what he's talking about.
Well, I'll tell you this, man, I got to work with him exclusively with Impact, and I can tell you, his respect for me and my respect for him was so mutual. And what a smart dude, man. Like, what a smart dude. And he was so concerned about referees and so concerned about protecting the business, the shit that's gone away now. We should probably – one day we're going to do a podcast on burying motherfuckers. But anyway.
Yeah, it's called Ask Brian Hebner Anything.
Oh, my.
Tremendous.
Please don't want the truth. But anyway, but no, what a smart, intelligent man, and just knows the business, man. And I'll tell you, I mean, I knew Lance when we were working together, but not to this to this aspect of where he is now. Mm-hmm. And man, I missed so much. I wish I would have gotten closer to him earlier, because man, what a dude! He's just a stand up guy, and just so smart in his business. And I love listening to him. I will stop. Mm-hmm. I will listen. I will shut up. I know I owe a lot, and I should know a lot. I've been in the business a long time, but he knows a lot, and I respect people that know a lot. And I'm, man, what a great hand Impact Wrestling has. I can tell you that right now. And I hope he stays there because he's really helping that product.
Yeah.
Sorry, Triple H. I know this is about you, but Lance, you need to be mentioned, buddy.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, but we can even compare it to, like, say, you know, roles were reversed, times are different.
say Triple H never really got into the office. Do you guys really see him as that trainer like a Lance Storm, where he has his own school, whether it be New Hampshire, Connecticut, or whatever? Do you see him becoming that next, this era's Killer Kowalski, and training the best of the best?
I think so, because he has it in him. He's a giving guy. He wants to give out that knowledge, and he's very good at working with others. He's, you know, and he's not afraid to critique, but he's also respectful in his critique, unless you really screw up really bad, and then he'll let you know it too. But, you know, I think him opening his own school would have been a no-brainer had he not got involved, you know, in the office at WWE and getting elevated that way. And, you know, obviously FCW taking over FCW, which eventually became NXT.
Right.
No, Brian, I go back and watch a lot of Triple H, cause I grew up watching a lot of Triple H's stuff. And you know, the common denominator, the third guy in the ring for a lot of his matches was your dad. It was Triple H. Was he handpicking your dad to be his referee, or was it kind of like, hey, it's Triple H was in the main event, so 9 times out of 10, your dad was doing it?
Well, no, but I mean, in those days, there was no handpicking at that point in time. Honestly, right. It was Earl Hebner did the main event, and that's just the way it was. And Jimmy was there throughout that whole process, but I can just tell you from what I've been told by my dad, I know he's not lying, but it was just, you know, if Triple H was in the main event quite a bit, and Earl Hebner was the main event referee on that show. And that's just the way it went. I don't think Triple H went and handpicked my father. I don't. I think that Triple H accepted my father and liked my father and wanted to have my father in there, but it wasn't handpicked. No, I think that he realized, and you have to remember, Triple H wasn't in power at all during all these years. Right. So he gave, you know, he got what he got, which was Earl Hebner. So it wasn't a handpicked thing. No. And Jimmy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Earl was the main event referee during that period of, I don't know how long, but it was quite a while. Yeah. But, you know, am I right?
No, you're absolutely right. Earl did the main event, and that's the way it was. And, you know, some of the younger guys were like, how come he does all the main event? Because he's the senior official, and he knows what he's doing, and he knows that it's not about him. It's about helping get the match over, not helping get himself over. It wasn't about getting Earl Hebner over. It was about helping the talent tell their story. And Earl was a master at it. He was, you know, and I'm not just saying that because he's your dad. It just, I learned more from Earl and Dave Hebner than anybody else in this business. And they were awesome, and that's where they belonged. And in those days, that's what you had. You had your main event referee, and Earl was the guy.
Well, Earl wasn't getting over until he beat the crap out of Nick Patrick in 2001, right?
Well, that was a little bit of a different story there. Yeah. But again, and getting back to him doing all the main events and, of course, refereeing a lot of Hunter's matches when Hunter was in the main events, Hunter also had this comfort factor with Earl in the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when you get someone you're not familiar with, there's always a, will he be there for this? Will he be there for that? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if I can go back again to another. I had the pleasure of refereeing Hunter's match at the Eddie Tribute Show on Raw.
Yeah.
And I know people say you can't say it was him versus Chris Benoit. And I just went up and asked Hunter. I said, Hunter, you know, like, you don't mind me asking what you're doing. He said, the finish is supposed to be this, but as far as the rest of the match, we're just going to call it out there. I said, well, I'll do my best. He says, I know you will. Don't worry about it. And then after the match was over, you know, the first person I ran into back was Hunter, and he came over. He gave me a big hug, and he said, thanks, Jimmy. You know, you did a hell of a job. And I started crying. Mm-hmm. Not just because of that, but because of the whole situation with Eddie and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I had a special relationship with Eddie, Hunter knew that. He knew that we had that relationship, and he comforted me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool.
So Triple H, he ended up coming over from WCW in 95. Was that the first time that you really saw his work, Jimmy, or did you see some of his stuff over in WCW?
No, I did see some of his stuff in WCW. Obviously, couldn't watch a lot of it. Being up here in Canada and being on the road is too, we didn't get to watch a lot of it, but I saw some of his stuff. And, you know, when he was on, you'd say, hey, you know, that guy's got something. Maybe one day, you don't know, you know. I don't want to say, oh, I saw it right from the start. You know what I mean? But there was something there. And I thought, you know, under the right circumstances, maybe this guy could be a player. That was my thinking.
Yeah. No, because in 95 there, I remember watching him on WCW Saturday Night on TBS at 6:05. And like I said, luckily enough, I was fortunate enough. My grandmother had one of those big old school satellite dishes in her backyard. So we were probably like 50 yards away. So she ran a wire to our house and to her house. So I was living between TBS and TNT and all that stuff. And I saw him hit one of his last runs there. They ended up trying to team him up with William Regal.
Lord Regal.
Oh, Lord Stephen Regal. Excuse me.
Yes.
that's you know, going back and looking at research that we've done, or not we've. I'm sorry, RJ. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay, and we're gonna isolate that, and that's gonna be my new text tone when you call. Okay.
Whatever. So no, but they repackaged him in WCW as a French Canadian aristocrat. Mm-hmm. So we could just call anybody Canadian? That was weird. That's weird to me.
Wait. There's a difference. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jimmy. There's a difference between Canadian and French Canadian, correct?
Well, if you talk to people in Quebec, yes. But, okay. You know, Canadian is Canadian. And if I'm not mistaken, he does have some roots.
Really?
DNA. I believe he has some like distant French family roots. from Quebec, but
well, maybe it's French and not Canadian French.
I think it's from Canada because he's, you know, from Mass and stuff like that. So
yeah,
okay. Now you want to claim him as your own? All right,
of course.
Why not? If he can, why not?
Exactly.
But no, he comes in 95. And he comes Hunter Hearst Helmsley, obviously later Triple H. Ultimately, could you have seen that Hunter Hearst Helmsley character really go throughout his career? Or was it one of those things where he just kind of reinvented himself, kind of went with the times, you know, Attitude Era came there and then, you know, the late 90s. And that's kind of what thrusted him into the main light.
You saw the character did have legs, the aristocrat kind of thing. We'd seen it before. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like a brand new character. And once he started to evolve and evolved into the Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the Triple H, and we started to see him more relaxed and starting to be more of himself and having fun, that felt genuine. And the crowd felt it too. And you can see that the audience bought into it, regardless of whether they were part of the clique and getting booed or, you know, as a babyface, people felt him. He got people invested in him, and that's what this business is all about: getting the audience invested in you. And he was a master at getting doing that. And if I can also mention that in the clique, for all the heat that the clique had, he was the sound mind and voice of that group. If that makes sense, because there's always the one guy that kind of like keeps everything calm while everybody else is creating shit. So to speak.
Yeah.
He was the one bridge that kept and also kept everybody. Hey, come on, guys, let's keep this. You know, he was the sound voice and mind of the group. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I'll say this too, touching on that Hunter Hearst Helmsley character. It had legs, but as Jimmy said, he did his job and got heat and got people to hate him, which internally means people care about him. And the transformation to me, was probably in the history of wrestling, one of the top five as far as going from one extreme to the other. Because I followed his career because actually I was a big Hunter Hearst Helmsley fan. I was. I liked the gimmick and I liked it. And just seeing where it went from there to where he went to I don't know how many years ago where he's done. I mean, he's done. What was his last match, by the way?
Oh,
last match was, well, let me look at it here, because it was, I believe it was like Major was with Rousey and Stephanie, and then Angle and Rousey taking on himself and Stephanie, and also you remember the Mania match with him and Sting.
Okay.
Sting came into the company. Now, I believe that was San Francisco or Santa Clara or something like that.
Okay. So you know, I look at guys, and there's probably plenty of examples I'm not thinking about. Plenty, probably. But, you know, I'm just thinking current or somewhat current. The transformation from that character, you know, to where he went to as the game is just unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable to me. I almost compare it to, like, say, Undertaker from where he came from. I also take it from a John Cena. I mean, John Cena's character sucked when he first started. I mean, it did. And look where he went and what he did. You know what I mean? So cahoots to him as far as that goes. I mean, and that's just my opinion. I mean, I'm sure, Jimmy, you probably got a lot more as far as character development goes. But my God, that's got to be a big one, isn't it?
Of course it is. It's huge. And it's funny that you mentioned Undertaker, because that's the name that came to my mind as well when you're talking about characters that evolved and evolved. I don't want to say for the better, evolved and made it relevant, made it count, made it stick, made it work. That's the thing. There's a difference when you change characters and it doesn't work, but Hunter made everything work, just like Taker, regardless of what iteration, whether he was the dead man or the biker Taker, whoever it was. And John Cena, like you said, when he came out and, you know, ruthless aggression into what he became, because it felt natural to them, you know, and again, it wasn't, here's what you're doing, here's what you're saying. It was, here's what we'd like you to say, but do it as you. Yeah, and they had a little bit of the freedom to create. And so, when you give creative minds that freedom, it's awesome.
So Knight comes in 95. By 96, he's really thrusted into the limelight. I mean, not the semi-main event, mid-card, really starting to become, you know, getting legs underneath him. Then the curtain call happens. So how much of that really, like, deeply affected him, do you think? Because obviously the rumor and innuendo was he was supposed to win King of the Ring in 96. Instead, Austin comes in, wins it. So I think it worked out pretty well for Stone Cold, pretty good the rest of his career. But
what'd you say?
It worked pretty well. It worked pretty well for Stone Cold the rest of his career.
He did all right.
He did. Right.
He did all right.
But he ends up winning 97 King of the Ring. How, obviously, Jimmy, you were there. You saw a lot of it going on. How much of that really affected him, or was he pretty good hiding it?
No, he just, you know what? He took it. He was the one getting most of the heat, because at that time, you know, obviously Razor and Kevin were leaving, you know, and it was him and Sean left, and Sean was the big star. So Hunter decided, I'll take all the heat and let, I'll absorb all the heat for the group, which is what he did. And he took it upon himself, and eventually things worked out, because you can't keep natural talent down. And that's what happened. He didn't sit there and whine and moan and bitch and complain. He took it like a man, and he didn't, you know, what did exactly what they asked him to do. And they saw that and they said, hey, you know what? And they knew that he was taking the heat for Sean, because, you know, they saw money in Sean. Let's put it that way. Right. And then as time went on, they saw money in Hunter as well. But at that time, Sean was a guy who they saw money in.
So Jimmy, where was he, if you were saying card-wise, where was Hunter when the curtain call happened? Card-wise, was he still a mid-carder at that point? And then my next question, that's like a double question here. Was he a mid-carder rising? Was he just still stuck in the middle when this all happened? And then how did he get with the Click? Like, how was he involved with the Click?
I don't know how they got together. They I hate to use the term, they just clicked. Those guys got along. They became friends. And, you know, like, sometimes opposites attract, because you see the one side, then you see Hunter and you go, how does Hunter associate with those guys? Those guys are wild and stuff like that. And Hunter's like the voice of reason. And maybe that's why they clicked, because he was the voice of reason in that group. And as far as his position on the card, he was more middle, moving up from the middle card and getting up there, because he was involved in that group. But at the same time, once that curtain call happened, that put a stop to everything for like you said, like about a year before they realized, you know what? We have something in this guy. We got to take advantage of it now.
Yeah, so excuse me. So we went Skin in the Ring 97, beating Mankind. Mm-hmm. Dude, man, it's kind of like looking in what do they call a glass ball, looking into mm-hmm. the future between Mick and Hunter. Man, they just had some knockout, drag out fights. I remember, I believe it was Royal Rumble 99. It was in whatever it was, MSG. Then when they had that street fight, when he turned out, when he came out as Cactus.
Yes. Yeah. I believe you're right. I'll take your word for it.
And it's just like, oh man, they just love working together, right? You think?
Yeah, they did, because they both had the same love for this business, and they mm-hmm. both understood that it was not about getting myself over. It's about getting a character over, getting both guys over, because if we both can get over, there's the old saying in this business, you can get over without going over.
Right.
And they both understood that. And it was more about getting the business over, getting the characters over, and getting the match over, as it was to getting myself over. And they knew that if they got over in that respect, not just winning the match, but getting over with the audience, that would elevate them as well. Mm-hmm. They understood that, but they had that chemistry too, that they loved working together and the respect for each other. And that's a big thing.
Yeah. I actually just looked it up. It was Royal Rumble 2000.
Ah, okay.
And I was in the ballpark. No, they actually ended up main eventing that. Well, obviously outside the Rumble, but yeah, it just, this time era, I say probably between 97 and 98, you saw a lot of the guys like Mick and Triple H, Undertaker, and you throw Rock in there. Mm-hmm. Rock was really coming strong. I remember their match at MSG SummerSlam 98, that ladder match they had for the IC title. And it just unreal. You wouldn't think, okay, Rock, Triple H, ladder match. It's like, but they made it work.
Mm-hmm. Because they understood how to utilize the ladder without just doing spots for the sake of spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They understood the psychology behind it. We're going to do this with the ladder, but why are we doing this with the ladder? It's because this is the story we're telling and blah, blah, blah. You know, again, it was a chemistry that they got to work together with, and they understood that it was more about getting the match over as opposed to and their characters over.
Yeah. And it was one of those ladder matches too. You see now they got like, you have a ladder match, you have like 30 ladders out there. Mm. You go back to 97, 98, even going back to 94 with Sean and Razor, they have at most 3 ladders. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just like, okay, you kind of need a backup in case something breaks, but yeah, still.
Yeah. It's this, for some reason, there's this thing, especially in today's world, where everybody thinks that more is better. More is just more. Can it be better? At times it can. Some people like car crash television and stuff like that. And at times it does work and it can be entertaining. But that seems to be the order of the day far too often, as opposed to being a special circumstance where we get to see it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to stay in 97. 97 is a real, really crucial time period for wrestling in general here in WWF at that time, even on the other channel with WCW. You get the formation of DX in 97, late in the mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. You had Shawn, Triple H, China, and Rick Rude.
Right.
I want to bring up China just because I just think, regardless opinions on whoever's listening, whatever, but she is so crucial in the development of Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
No, absolutely. They were a pair and they worked so well together. If I can make a comparison today, she doesn't look like China, but you look at Rhea Ripley with Judgment Day currently mm-hmm. in WWE. That's kind of a comparison you can make. They are a different group with her in it.
Mm-hmm.
They stand out more. And Hunter stood out more with someone like China. And there's another graduate of the Killer Kowalski school where they both trained together, actually. And it was one of those deals where once you saw them together, it felt like they belonged together. You know,
I just feel like, you know, the whole DX thing was absolutely amazing to me, just simply because of the fact that everyone associates four people with the four horsemen, and that's mm-hmm. just a common thing. And I get it; I'm not knocking it or saying that you shouldn't. But you know, you think about that group: Shawn Michaels, Triple H, China, and Rick freaking Rude. Okay. Well, their presentation was totally different than the Horsemen. Mm-hmm. It was a edgy, it was a good, I want to say comedic TV, but it wasn't always comedic. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what made it great, because you go in there. I mean, I remember seeing the clips, and I remember watching, you know, when Shawn Michaels would come out with the windshield wipers on and mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, they just were innovative and things that were just so cool. And I don't know. And like China was a force. She laid the law, like as far as a woman and a freaking man, like just, mm-hmm. you know, a freak of nature. The ninth wonder of the world. Is that right? Or did I mess that up?
Eighth wonder.
Eighth.
Okay. I knew it. I knew I was wrong. Anyway, where do we read my research? But yeah, so, I mean, there was just so many different things. I mean, and at that time, wasn't Rick Rude wearing the suits when he went yeah. in the suit?
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, I mean, you got that Four Horsemen feel with that, but then you got that children acting out. It was just really, really neat. And it's never going to be duplicated in my mind. Never.
All right.
Just like the Four Horsemen. I mean, so yeah, agreed. It was awesome. 97 was a big year for Triple H, as far as getting over and being a major player in the business.
We're going to fast forward a little bit. We'll get into a couple matches too, that you guys were involved with Triple H mm-hmm. in a little bit too, but you said 97 is a big crucial year for him, Brian, but I'd say you go 2000, 2001, 2002, were even more crucial for him. Obviously he had that major quad injury mm-hmm. coming back in 2002 at Madison Square Garden in January. So probably one of the biggest pops I've ever heard, not live, but even on TV. Leaning up to that, have you guys ever seen somebody recuperate so quickly and so so efficiently from a major injury like that?
No, that was very rare, and it is a testament to him and his dedication to getting better. And some people, you know, I guess their body, they heal faster than others, but you know, he did work hard to come back. And if there's one thing that he did, I don't know if he got this from Vince or whatever, but because if you're talking about somebody who put time in the gym, Hunter put time in the gym, and mm-hmm. he would work his butt off all the time. And that's the other reason why, you know, I hate to go back to this. We were wondering the association with the other guys from the Click. You know, Hunter was a gym guy. The other guys, not so much. I mean, they did their time in the gym. They had to. But at the same time, they also liked having fun. Mm-hmm. Hunter was almost like the babysitter of the group. I hate to put it that way, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and here's another thing too. You know, people have their own associations with people. And there's people that like Triple H. There's people that love Triple H. There's people that accept Triple H. There's people that can't stand Triple H. There's people that hate Triple H. But anyone that does any of those options I just gave you, that can ever doubt the passion that he's got for this business, the heart, the willingness to work, the willingness to make others better, the willingness to be a giving person, the willingness to give to the actual business. Yeah, he's done things to get himself over, but guess what? That's what we do. We're egotistical maniacs, and we all are. And guess what? He's no different than you. He got over and you didn't. That's your problem. Don't get mad at him for it. But if you ever want to doubt what he is and what he's not, as far as this business goes, look yourself in the mirror. That's all I can tell you, because I can tell you right now, he's a smart mind, mm-hmm. intelligent mind, and a guy who really gets it and understands how to get people over and get himself over. And that's what this business is about.
So 2002, like I said, is a major year for me. Starts at really big feud with Shawn in the summer, culminating there SummerSlam, and then ultimately culminating in Hell in the Cell match at Bad Blood 2003. You know, friends, foes, what have you, you know, it's sometimes said that, you know, sometimes your best enemy is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And
they probably just absolutely love working with each other. This is just when Sean came back there from that major back injury that he had at WrestleMania, which sidelined him for years. Was it just a matter of just having fun? Let's go out there, have fun kind of thing, Jimmy.
That, and also there was a trust factor involved too, because, you know, when you come back from an injury like that, that Sean had, you sometimes worry about, let's be honest, the smallest little thing that doesn't look devastating, you can get hurt on. And he trusted Hunter to help him protect him as best as he could. That's for sure, because they were such good friends, and he knew he could put his trust in Hunter, and Hunter is such a good enough worker. He could make things look great and look painful. And he knew how to sell as well. And they took their time, and they told a story, and they're two guys that were masters at it. And they, like Brian said, there is some ego involved too, but at the same time, these guys were more about getting that match over as opposed to, hey, I have to go over in this one.
Right. You know, and even early 2003, we see the formation of Evolution with himself, Ric Flair, Randy Orton, Batista. Was this Triple H's kind of paying homage to the Four Horsemen, or was this kind of like, hey, you got two young guys in Randy and Batista. You got legitimately the greatest of all time in Flair, and then you got Triple H, who's that ring general. Was that kind of his tribute to them?
That, as they say, all of the above. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. It was a formation of a new group, but also paying homage to Ric Flair's legacy, being part of the Four Horsemen as well. And this was like a new Four Horsemen. It was the evolution of the Four Horsemen. This is Ric Flair kind of passing the torch down to Hunter, so to speak, who in turn is, you know, eventually down the line going to pass it down to Batista and Randy Orton, as we saw later on.
So ultimately, we're going to see him in Undertaker, WrestleMania after WrestleMania, you know, the end of an era match with himself and Taker, as well as with Shawn as a referee. If you go back and watch, you don't get goosebumps, you don't shed a tear, man. That's kind of like watching my childhood. You know what I mean? Because three of those guys I grew up watching. And I don't really think we're going to see that really again. You can't really compare anybody to them, but you're not really going to see that unless you really see the guys like a Seth Rollins or Roman Reigns or something like that go at it. But you know, wrestling's totally different nowadays compared to when they had that last match there.
No, absolutely. The times they are a-changing, as they say. And unfortunately, it's more about especially with a lot of the hardcore fans, they instead of sitting back and saying, hey, I want to be entertained, just entertain me, they look to pick apart things and this guy's doing this and this guy's doing that. No, just sit back, relax, and try to just absorb it and have fun again. I think a lot of the hardcore fans today have forgotten how to have fun and just sit back and relax and enjoy. That being said, doing what I do as a critique, so to speak, I sometimes find myself getting caught up in that world too. But at the same time, I do sit back and I try to enjoy the things I watch. But as far as your point about, we don't see the stars like that back in the day where, you know, you had your Hunters, you had your Stone Colds, you had your Rocks, you had, nobody stands out like that anymore. Like you said, Roman is probably the closest thing to it right now, but it's because he feels special. We don't see him every week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Everybody's trying to get themselves on TV every week. If you see them every week, then they don't feel special.
Yeah. So ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, Triple H, obviously, he's officially retired. He's not going to be in the ring anymore. He's the head of creative. He's the office. He's, you know, he's the man. He's the man.
Mm-hmm.
How can I put this? Where do you see him taking this? Do you see them really taking it to the levels of, compared to that Monday Night War era, where you can really have, when you think wrestling, WWE, they're getting up there?
No, I think, see, here's one thing I think Hunter's brilliant at. Hunter is brilliant at knowing what the what today's wrestling environment is like. But at the same time, he understands that there is a place for old school and old school psychology and old school mentality. And I think he is the perfect person to bridge the gap between old school and new school and make it work. And he's slowly starting to show signs of that we're seeing it, you know, in the last 2 weeks now, that Raw has become a little more unpredictable. It's becoming a little more entertaining. People are starting to go, and they're and leaving question marks where people are going, hey, I want to tune in to find out and see what's going on. He gets that. But at the same time, he's also incorporating some old school mentality at the same time, along with some new school presentation. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, he is the perfect bridge for that blending of both worlds to make it work. As long as the change happens over time, don't rush it. Take your time. And I know he will.
And then another thing here, you know, and I've seen a lot of this, and I noticed it before I saw it online, which is crazy, is that the commentary for many people is been put over. Mm-hmm. These guys have the leash, like, let go. They can do what they want. I mean, we're hearing referees' names all of a sudden. My God, let's not put them over at all because they're not part of that match. Like you said, it's a gradual change. I can bet, and Jimmy, you know just as well as I do, much longer than I know, that creative process has got to be so much fucking easier and more relaxed. I mean, rewriting an hour, 30 minutes, 10 minutes I've heard, you know, before show because Vince just didn't like something. I don't like it. I mean, all right, whatever.
Glasses down here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's write a show and let's play it out. So, you know, I really hope because I can tell you right now, and I'm being honest, WWE's been something I've had a very hard time watching for a while. And I'm not knocking on them because I have a hard time watching a lot of it now. But I'm just old school and you can't change it about me. But if you can give me a little bit of it, I'm good. And I think Triple H is going to do a good job of this. I really do. I think that he's the best man in the one that should be where he's at. And I don't think it has anything to do with who he's married to.
Exactly. And if I could just piggyback a little bit off what you said with the commentary team, you're also starting to see it in promos as well. Big example this week with Bayley's promo, where she seemed to go, I don't want to say off script, but she seemed to improvise a little bit with the audience and you know, do a little back and forth and get some real heat from that audience with her back and forth with them. So I think like you said, the reins have been loosened a little bit, giving them a little bit more freedom to experiment out there and see what works. And like you said, Brian, it's working with the commentary team, actually saying wrestling on television now is okay and stuff like that. So again, people want to change a 180 overnight. You can't do it like that. You have to do a slow and gradual change to get to where you want it to be. And I think Hunter's the perfect guy to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely going to be something to see. And I'm sure people will be tuning in Friday to see what Woody has up his sleeves again this week. And hopefully we'll see some new guys and gals coming back. But with that being said, we're going to send it up to our third count. We'll talk a little bit about a match that you did with Triple H, Brian, and hopefully we can get your thoughts on it as well, Jimmy. But let's just send it up real quick. Brian, this was one of your few times that you were on Raw. 2004, March 22nd to be exact, Triple H was just drafted over from Raw to SmackDown in the draft that they had, seemed like every year pretty much. He's taken on Eddie Guerrero, putting the title on the line. Joe Louis Arena, God rest its soul, another great arena for wrestling in Detroit. What did you go into this match? Did you know that he was going to get drafted to SmackDown, or was this one of the things, hey, this happened, you're here, let's go?
I'll be completely honest. I'll give you a little backstory on this. This is a pretty, pretty cool story. And Jimmy, actually, you're involved in this, and you probably don't remember this, but I'm gonna jog you.
Okay.
This was when SmackDown and Raw were running simultaneously, kind of in the same area, and SmackDown would have the day off during Raw.
On Mondays, yeah.
Yes. And this was when me, you, Chimmel, and I can't remember the fourth, and I'm so sorry. I wish I could. I want to say Larry Heck. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Our trainer, Larry Heck. But anyway, we were out on the golf course and playing golf. And I got a call. It was from my dad because he was approached by I don't know who. Just being honest, I would assume probably the agent or whatever it may be, and said, you know, my dad calls me and says, where are you at? And I said, I'm on the golf course playing some golf. Where are you at the building doing some fucking work? Laughing, you know, thinking everything's cool. A couple beers in me already, which is not good. But anyway, who cares? Fire me. Long story short, he tells me I have a match on Raw and I need to get the Raw. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, you have the Eddie Guerrero versus Triple H match, the main event on Raw. And I said, holy shit. Why me? He was like, do you not want to do it? And I was like, I didn't say that. I'm just asking why me. He said, because Eddie wants you to come here and do it. And I said, okay, well, I'll be there. So I don't know if you remember that, Jimmy, but that's when we had to leave the golf course early.
Okay.
And you might have been drinking too. I don't know. But
maybe.
Probably not.
No.
But anyway, so we had left the course, and I got a ride with one of the crew members that were close to the hotel or whatever. And there and did that that match. And I remember very, very vividly the layout was very similar to what Jimmy's was with Benoit, where it was, here's the finish, because there is no finish, and we're just going to call that shit out there, and we're going to wait for we get to the finish, because basically it's a bunch of ha-ha, and we just want to fucking fill this time for the main event, get some good stuff in, a couple falsies here and there, going to really kill the house, and then we're going to wait for all the schmas.
Right.
I was like, wow, okay, this is easy. But still, you're working with Triple H and Eddie Guerrero, so you better be on your toes. And you know that, Jimmy. You know how that works, especially Eddie. yeah. So that's pretty much how that started the whole deal.
Yeah, because that was one of the things, too. It's like they usually didn't let the talent know where they were going. And I'm like, I don't know if they did that with Triple H or not, being, you know, at this time, he's over like Rover at this time in 2004. Yeah. It's like, was that something? I know rumor, like I said, rumor has it that they never knew. Is that something that you saw too as well, Jimmy?
No, I saw it as well. I mean, like it's, see, here's the thing about the Hunter, you're talking about 2004. I'm thinking even before that, Hunter was a good ring general. You know what I mean? He could, he was not only someone who could call a match, he was also someone who could listen and help tell the story of a match as the match went along. And he was great at calling it out there, which is, you know, a bit of a lost art, if I may say so myself nowadays. So,
Jimmy, let's clear this up. It's a lost art, period.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was trying to be a little bit nice, but yeah, it is a lost art. Nobody calls it out there anymore. But, you know, the guys that did and do it well, Hunter is on that short list of best to ever do it.
Yeah, and even like this match, obviously you guys, Brian, you've done a lot of matches with Eddie on SmackDown, Jimmy, pretty much all over the place. And it was one of those things too. It's like going back and watching, it's like, oh man, this is so great. This is when wrestling was wrestling, because you get two guys that absolutely, you know, obviously Eddie's the history there. His family's in the business. Triple H is just nonstop professional wrestling. And it showed. It was just that psychology, the two great ring generals of all time. And that's something that we really don't see nowadays either, is those, that one specific guy that's a ring general that will basically, they could grab you by the shirt tail and, okay, you get over here kind of thing.
Well, and see, that match, you know, I won't say that it was special to me or anything like that, because it wasn't. It ended in a schmoz. It was no big deal for me. But as far as me, no, don't give me, let me take that back. It was a big deal for me. But what I'm saying, as far as me working wise, it wasn't a big deal. It was nothing to remember. It wasn't much for me to like really figure out, which is always nice to have sometimes. But I just remember, and I always talk to people and tell them this. I can guarantee you, and Jimmy, you'll vouch, that they probably had a couple spots they wanted to set up. But other than that, it was literally this called on the fly. And neither one of them knew where they were going and what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. They were filling time. They knew what they had. They knew what they had time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They had their major spots at what point in the match, and then they just caught it.
Right.
And I'm not going to say this because I don't know this for a fact. Well, I kind of do. But I think Triple H kind of gave the reins to Eddie at this point and just said, you know what, you call it, you're the heel. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And
old school again, heel calls the match.
Absolutely. And he did. And, you know, the most fascinating thing for me about this whole match was that there were things they just started throwing out there, like just quick roll ups and this and that. And then it was absolutely, absolutely amazing. It was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Eddie was in a good state of mind at that point, too. And the reason how that match happened, so people know, the reason why the SmackDown belt was being defended on Raw on the main event is because Triple H was still on Raw and just mm-hmm. got drafted, but he hadn't had a chance to leave. So he demanded a SmackDown title shot. And of course, Eddie, so it was really cool. And it was really cool for the crowd. I mean, this was a match that had never been seen at this point. So it was really cool. And I was very blessed to be part of it and very blessed to be called about it. So wonderful stuff. I just really liked it. And I know there was a lot of distractions. And I know that, you know, Batista, HBK, Rey Mysterio, RVD, Christian, Cena, I mean, it was a bunch of schmas at the end. But that was meant to be. They didn't want a finish. They didn't want a finish. Right. They wanted to take it away from you, to want you want more. Mm-hmm. And that's when it was being written properly, because it was like, oh, this sucks. God, I hate this. I want to see them fight. That's what they did. And that's why that was what it was.
Yeah. Even like you said, you know, a lot of guys that called in the ring, the only guys that really come to my mind currently, I'll give you a tag team and our singles wrestler. You got your tag team out there with FTR.
Mm-hmm.
That really dedicate themselves to paying homage to like the Midnights, to the Rock and Rolls, to the Horsemen, and really bring that old school feel back. And the other guy, and this is somebody that you know, Brian, is Nick Aldis.
Mm.
That
well, I have to throw out another name. I really do, and I love him to death, and he loves me to death, and I swear I do miss him every day. It's Josh Alexander, man. He's a beast. He is. He's a beast. Yep. He's homage to old school, and I like it. I like it a lot.
Good Canadian kid.
Yes. Well, golly, here we go with this. No, I love him, Jimmy. You know,
he's a good dude. He's a really good dude.
No, he really is. And I'll just say, I mean, it's not a lost complete art, but it overall is a lost art.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's probably a handful of people we can name. And I'm being fair. I don't work for AEW. I don't work for WWE. I don't work for anybody else. The last place I worked for was Impact Wrestling. I can tell you right now, there are people that I can call, not call, but say that call matches. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lot. It's not. So cahoots to him. I just want to put him over because he is one of those guys.
Cool.
You know, just to, put a bow on this, quick, Jimmy, is you got any lasting memories about Triple H as far as matches in ring, road stories, what have you?
Like he was part of that six pack challenge that I talked about earlier from the referee strike angle. He also, being honored, like I said, I'll tell you what, after the unfortunate accident with Owen, the next day, like I tell people, I still don't remember how I got from Kansas City to St. Louis, but the next day in St. Louis, he was one of the first people I ran into, and he just came up again, gave me a big hug and said, you need him, Taker, separately, but him and Taker both came up to me, gave me a big hug, said, you need anything, you come talk to me. You know, like if you, it doesn't matter what it is. He's just that kind of compassionate guy. And it's funny, going back to the Montreal screw job, back in Montreal, going from one thing to another, I'm trying to lighten the mood up a little bit after that. But anyways, so the whole Montreal, go ahead.
All right, you were doing great. Now you got to go back and bury a Hebner. Here we go.
No. This isn't. But here's the funny thing about it though, the screw job happens. We get to Ottawa the next day. Then the week after that. What they wanted to do though is play off that because Owen was still a part of WWE at the time and Brett had left, Neidhart had left. He wanted to start a Canadian faction. And this was Hunter's idea of the Canadian faction coming back to take out the, you know, Sean and the DX crew, the old click guys, and they were going to have me be the rogue referee, Canadian referee, siding with the Canadian guys. This was Hunter's idea. So it would be like the Canadian faction or the Canadian mafia or whatever the heck name they were going to give it, getting their retribution against DX and the click and Vince and all that sort of stuff. And right before that was supposed to happen, Hunter blew out his patella, and of all places in Hamilton in Canada here, you know what I mean? And it never, you know, it never came to light of day. And Hunter came up to me, so sorry it didn't happen, you know, like, and I'm like, don't worry about that. You just get better. But at the same time, I'm glad it didn't happen, because if I get pigeonholed in that situation, where do you go from after that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like now you're stuck in that role. Like, look at other referees who were put in positions, Nick Patrick's and stuff like that. And then how do you go back to just being a referee like you were before? So I he said, look at the bright side. At least you get to keep your job a little while longer and not get written out.
Well, yeah. So one second thing I want to touch on, Jimmy, real quick, that you probably didn't know, and this is another hats off to Triple H. Mm-hmm. You probably do know about this, because, you know, I always talk to you about things when I was done. Mm-hmm. I was still very green, in my opinion. And I had a Jericho versus Triple H match. I'm sorry, Jericho versus, gosh. RJ, help me out here.
RVD?
Oh, okay. RVD, okay.
King of the Ring?
No, it was the one where we talked about on episode where he was supposed to get the belt and got the belt. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Anyway, Jericho tells me all day long that he's going to grab the belt, the title belt. And he grabs the belt. So I'm thinking, okay, well, he didn't grab the fucking belt, so I'm going to let him go ahead and do whatever he's doing. I figured as we get kicked out of his hand, whatever. So he turns around. He's like, grab this, you dumb motherfucker. Grab it, you stupid son of a bitch. So finally, I grab the belt, which I thought was supposed to be the belt. You know what I mean? And he blistered me and cussed me from one end to the other. Now, me and Jericho are fine, but, I mean, he blistered me.
Right.
I went to the back, and I'm crying. I mean, silently, by myself. Like, and Triple H just happens to walk in, because at that time, I was actually changing where my dad was at, because he was there that night. I don't know why, because we never traveled together. So it must have been a cross promotion or something. And that's where, you know, Larry and all them guys were, the doctors. And Triple H walks in there and sees me crying, and I tell him all about it. And he goes, I'll fix this tomorrow. He went up to Jericho and basically laid the law down to him. And he really did. He gave it to him. And Jericho came up to me the next day and apologized to me and said he was sorry. He misinformed me. He said the one thing he said that I'll never forget, and he's completely right. Listen, I was green. Dude, if you know the spot, you know if it's a bell, a belt, it doesn't matter. You grab the motherfucker. Right. I just didn't do it. You know what I mean? And because I was scared. And he just said, you need to know the spot and need to know what to get no matter what it is. And he's right. But I'm just saying, it was a cool thing for Triple H to do for me. He didn't have to. He just happened to see me down in the dumps, because I was. I thought I was going to get fired. I didn't know. Pat Patterson put it over, said it was no big deal. Jericho was crazy. He was like, whatever. But you know how Jericho is. Well, so anyway, long story short, the guy protected me, looked out for me, made a guy apologize to me that probably shouldn't have apologized to me.
Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on tonight under short notice. We really appreciate it. Plug everything you got. I know you got your Rough and Rants every day and all your merch store there as well.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. A very much a pleasure to be here today, man. Always great talking to my good brother in Stripes. Not only good brother in Stripes, but a good brother on the golf course too, Brian Hebner. And you can catch me every weekday doing my Ref and Rants on all my social media pages at Jimmy Corderas on Twitter, at Real Jimmy Corderas, Instagram, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. And it's just something I'm having fun with. And you can get your Ref and Rant t-shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com and get them there. You can catch me on Cameo, and you can catch me avoiding Chimmel as much as I can on Twitter.
I didn't know Chimmel was on Twitter or not active anymore.
Neither did he.
Oh my, he's tweeting like a madman.
Yeah. And so, here's the weird thing. He's thanking people. Who? What the heck?
I know. Everybody.
It's about time. It's about time.
Because he buried so many people, he's feeling bad now.
I guess so. Anyways, guys, thank you again so much. Very much appreciate you guys having me on. And we'll talk again soon for sure.
Definitely.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Much love, guys.
Thanks, bud.
Big thanks, obviously, to Mr. Jimmy Corderas for coming on tonight with us, Brian. But hit us up wherever you get this great podcast. Make sure you're subscribing wherever you're hearing it. We appreciate everybody for tuning in each and every week. Hit us up on the Twitter and Instagram at Reffin' It Up. He is at Baby Hebner all across the board. Big shout out to our man JD, just killing it each and every week, Brian. Each and every week, he's doing fantastic work.
Yes, what a wonderful piece of our puzzle, man. And you know, we can't forget about AJ McCain,
of course.
For that hot opening.
I just listened to it today.
Of course you did. Jesus
Christ. Of course
Christ. I did. But yeah. And also, I really want to thank Jimmy for coming in last minute. I thought it was great and added a lot of detail for us. And yeah, not a normal format for us, but it's something different. We just want to kind of switch it up. And I thought it came out pretty well, and I hope you guys really enjoy it or actually enjoyed it.
And then in a couple weeks, Chicago, Illinois, Saturday, September the 3rd, the showcase show, the wrestling showcase, that is, you'll be appearing as one of the referees in the tournament. We'll be doing meet and greets as well from 1 to 3 at the venue right outside. Go over to wrestlingshowcase.com for tickets right now. Doors are at 3. Bell is at 4, top to bottom. You ain't going to be disappointed with these matches, Brian. I can guarantee you that. But next week, we're going to be talking about a guy that you know fairly well from your TNA days. Mr. Austin Aries will be the topic of the show. We'll be talking about the match you were involved with him from Victory Road 2012. Austin Aries versus Zema Ion for the X Division title. So hopefully that'll kick up some good memories in the old noggin there for you, Brian.
Actually, it will. And I don't even need memories to kick up. That match was freaking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. What a misinterpreted guy for a lot of people. But you know what? A lot of people in this business are. And guess what? I cannot wait. And maybe we'll have a surprise or two. We'll just check things out and see how things go.
Awesome. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll see you right back here on Reffin' It Up with Brian Hebner next Wednesday.
1, 2, 3.